Here we go. Parsha Vayikra starts off with Vayikra El Moshe. Vayidaber Hashem Elav Me'ol Moed Lemor. So he called out to Moshe. It doesn't say who called out, but he called out to Moshe, and God spoke to him from Ol Moed, saying, everybody knows the famous Vayikra is written with a small aleph. There's a small aleph, it's not a full aleph. Wow.
Yeah, what's going on?
I'm waiting for the world to self-destruct. Didn't happen yet. But so everybody knows there's a small aleph here. So the question is, why is there a small aleph? So the famous mimer that's brought down said Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't. He was humble. He was an anav. He didn't want people to think that he deserved a dibur from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He didn't want it. And Bilam is the one that says Vayikor. That's where Rashi gets it from. That Vayikor is usually said by Nevi'im of the other nations. So Vayikra, Moshe Rabbeinu felt that wasn't, I'm not Roy, I'm not deserving of such a thing. So he took out the Aleph in order to say, listen, I don't deserve it. Listen, Moshe Rabbeinu was not an idiot. He obviously deserved Vayikra. That's very, very clear. There was no one in the world that deserved Vayikra more than Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't lie to himself and say, oh, I don't deserve this, I don't deserve that. He clearly did it, and he knew who he was. So why did he do it this way? Aside from the fact there's a Stamakashi, Shekhar Baruch Chaim Knievsky, and there's also an Avi Ezri that goes into this inyan of how does Moshe Rabbeinu allowed to do whatever he wanted with the Torah? Wasn't he told what to write? So he says, Baruch Chaim Knievsky says he was told what to write, but not how to write it. That was the idea behind it. But regardless, Panach Raza says an unbelievable thing. And this is something, this is what a Baal Anav, listen to what he said. Panach Raza says, Moshe Rabbeinu thought he just had a special neshama. He thought he had a very holy neshama. Anyone who would have been given this special neshama would have done the exact same thing. There would have been no difference. The fact that Moshe Rabbeinu did this because he had a special neshama is the exact same thing as anybody else. It's just the neshama. It was a gift that I wasn't able to do. So it wasn't my goof, said Moshe Rabbeinu. It wasn't my decisions that made me as great as I am. It was a Kadosh Baruch Hu who put me in position to succeed. If a Kadosh Baruch Hu did everything for me, then why am I so great? I really didn't do anything. That's a pure anav. A pure anav. Let's think about that for a second.
Light up when he was born?
Yes. And that's what he was thinking, that anybody could have had that. But we know there are so many people that have unbelievable gifts. People that are unbelievably good looking. Unbelievably good looking. People that have a tremendous head. People that have great ichus. And they don't succeed. The fact that you have all the things going for you, all these things going for you, does not necessarily, that's not a recipe for success. You still have to make the right decisions and not make the wrong decisions. You still have to make sure that you don't do anything stupid. You still got to make sure you don't do that. So just because he had all these things and he was all together, that doesn't mean anything. But an anav thinks to himself, come on, what would I say? If anybody else would have had my body, it would have been the exact same thing. You think I'm any different from anybody else? Everybody is the same. Everybody is this exact same thing. That's a tremendous lesson to be able to think about yourself. To say to yourself, you want to knock yourself down? You want to throw yourself down? Throw yourself under the bus? You could just say to yourself, well, if anybody else would have been born with my talents, then they would have done so much better than I have. I'm only doing this because the Kadosh Baruch Hu gave me a tremendous amount of talents, and I'm just not messing it up so badly. I'm just not messing it up so as bad as I possibly could. You want to bring yourself up? You say to yourself, maybe other people with this talent wouldn't have done as well as I've done. You can bring yourself up or throw yourself down with this type of an idea of emotion, but it was an anav, and that's why he thought that way. The Kedushas Levi says a little bit different, but if you think about it, it's really the same. The small aleph is the following. Whatever mitzvah a person does, makes a roshem lamala. Something happens up above. Call it creating a mala. That's the way it's worded, seemingly, in Pirkei Avos. It's as if you created a malach that is good in Shemayim. That's what happens every time you do a mitzvah. Every malach that you create wakes you up a little bit more and makes you want to do more and more and more mitzvos. Because mitzvah goreres mitzvah. Once you do one mitzvah, you want to do another mitzvah. You want to go to the next mitzvah. You want to do more and more and more. So if you create that malach, you make that malach come, then you're going to want another malach to come, and another malach to come after that. One goes after the other. One keeps going. And that's how you can grow. That's how you lead yourself to be a true Obed Hashem. You want to become greater and better? What Moshe Rabbeinu did was he wrote down a little aleph. In Vayikra, he put in a little small aleph. You know why he put in the small aleph? He wanted to make a roshim for himself. He wanted to see it and read it every year when he came to Parshas Vayikra. He wanted to see that small aleph and say to himself, I'm nothing. I'm a nobody. I'm an absolute nobody. This is the Kedushas Levi's way of looking at it. So that he could realize there's so much more to do. There's so much more for him to grow with. There's so much more for him to have. And then he could be a true leader for Klal Yisrael. He could lead Klal Yisrael to believe that they were low, but Moshe Rabbeinu came, we can work together and we can keep going no matter what. No matter how great Moshe Rabbeinu was, he knew he always had to keep working. cooking. So again, what's the shot? Why keep a small aleph? Why have that small aleph? So we got two answers. Got the Panach Raza. He thought anybody with my neshama would have done the exact same thing. I'm no better than anybody else. My body isn't. My decisions aren't. It's just my neshama that's making me as great as I am. But he never stopped working, Moshe Rabbeinu. Never stopped working. He never said, well, if my neshama is so high, what do I have to work for? He never thought that. He always thought to himself, I can always grow. I can always do more. I can always push myself to become a tremendous person. That's that for that part. The Maral Diskin says, you know, we really shouldn't have gotten the Torah. The Torah should not have been given to us. So Moshe Rabbeinu went up to Shemayim. The Gemara in Shabbos and Pechas says this, as well as the Medrash Rabbah and Shmos. The Malachim complained, and they said, why are you giving Bnei Yisrael the Torah? They're going to mess it up. And they're not going to keep the sodas of the Torah, the secrets of the Torah. Don't bother giving it to them. Give it to us, the Malachim. We understand the secrets behind the Torah. We understand the world behind the Torah. Let us keep it and everything should be all good. Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't taina against the sodas of Torah. He couldn't go up against the idea of the Malachim. The Malachim were right. What did Moshe Rabbeinu taina? He said to them, this is the wording. Do you guys have parents? Could you do keep it off the aim? Do you guys have any other idols up here? Could you possibly be over on Lo Yelech Elohim Acherim Aponai? Are you jealous of anything? Could you commit murder? Is there any concept of adultery by you? All these things. Is there any such thing that exists by Malachim? He said, no. So we should get the Torah. Okay, but that's just pshat. In pshat, Malachim can't get the Torah. But the Malachim still had a taina. The angel said, fine, you're right. Keep the pshat. You guys can have pshat. You can maybe even have drush. Maybe even you can have remez. But you don't want, you're not getting sowed. What the Malachim wanted was to keep the secrets for themselves. To keep all the secrets of the Torah, the stuff that we barely understand, that Chazal say you should wait until you're 40, until you start doing, or if you're Sephardi, till 3, to start doing. So whatever it is, those sodos HaTorah should not be by us. And the Malachim said, we shouldn't get it. There's no reason for us to get it. Listen to what it says. Bnei Yisrael said the words, Nasa v'nishma. Nasa v'nishma. Why Nasa v'nishma? Said Bnei Yisrael, we'll do the mitzvos in pshat v'nishma. We want to hear a pshat behind them. We want to know the secrets behind the Torah. And we'll do it in order to get those sodos later on. You're right, we're not going to know it as perfectly as Malachim will. Come on, who's going to know it like Malachim? Who's going to be able to know the secrets of the Torah like the Malachim? The angels, of course, are going to have an advantage when it comes to something like this. There's nothing we're going to be able to do about that. There's nothing. But we want to do the Torah and eventually get a little bit of the sod. And you'll see, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the angels, when they get the sodos of Torah, they somewhat understand it. When we don't get it, we work harder and we work and we work and we work and we barely get a tiny little bit of that sod. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, give us the ability to just get the tiny little bit of the sod and to keep working for it, because you want to watch us work for something.
How come the
you want to watch us see?
Told the people a secret of the angels when they said that. It sounds like it's a uniquely human thing.
You're 100% right. That shot will have to be explained in a different way according to what we're saying right now. That's a good question altogether. How to understand what they were saying by Nasa and Ishma and the Malachim said, well, that's our secret. Maybe the pshat is that Bnei Yisrael, you'd have to translate it, that Bnei Yisrael were saying Nasa and Ishma and the Malachim are like, what? The Nishma is ours. They were saying the Nishma is ours. Who told Bnei Yisrael that there is a sod behind the Torah? Bnei Yisrael were able to figure it out on their own. And that's why there's so many things. I mean, we can understand reasons for mitzvahs, you know, basic reasons. Why do you have to keep this? Why do you have to do that? Why do you have to do... We can understand basic reasons. Why do we... the Korban Pasach, to remember that we left Mitzrayim. Why do we have... everything. There's reasons. And if you look through the Minchas Chinuch, you'll see the shorash of the mitzvah, the root behind the mitzvah, the reason why we do different mitzvahs. But the real reason, the real pshat, the sod, the real secrets behind the Torah, that we would cherish if we really understood it. If you really know what you're doing when you're learning the Zohar and understanding what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did when he put into the world, when he put these mitzvahs into the world, you would sit there and you'd be like, wow, how could I not do this mitzvah? How can I not do it? But sometimes we're not ready for it. If we hear it too early, it's a little bit hard. This is the idea of Vayikra before Vayedaber Hashem Elov. Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu, in short, the Ramazim that you are going to hear behind every mitzvah that I am going to teach you. Vayikra. Vayikra al Moshe. He called out to Moshe and he said, guess what? There are secrets. There are secrets here that you wouldn't believe. Secrets here that you wouldn't be able to understand. There are so many secrets here that are sitting here waiting to be said. And then Vayedaber Hashem Elov. Then HaKadosh Baruch Hu spoke to him the words, and Moshe Rabbeinu and Bnei Yisrael to spend time concentrating on those words, finding the secrets. They were never told the secrets of the Torah. They had to figure it out from the letters, and they spent 39 years in the desert going over those words that Moshe Rabbeinu was given, going through trying to figure out why this, why that, trying to find the secrets behind every single mitzvah. And some of them they were able to figure out. Some of them Moshe Rabbeinu was able to be Ramis to, but not all of them were all there. And that's the idea of Torah Shebaal Peh, the secrets of the Torah. That learning Gemara is not just stam to understand the little bits and pieces, and it's to understand the Torah so well that you can understand pshat behind a case that has nothing to do with something that's written in the Torah.
We believe Torah Shebaal Peh was given over, though.
100%. That's part of it. That's the idea. That's the Sotos HaTorah. For example, let me give you an example. Earlier this week, somebody came out to me and said, "You know, Judaism's unfair. Why is Judaism unfair? Because if you rape a girl, you only have to pay 50 silver pieces, and that's it, and then you're out." I said, "That's wrong." I said, "That's just wrong." He said, "What do you mean? I read it in a book." So I said, "Was the book written by a woman?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "She just didn't do research, and she just wanted to make Judaism look bad." He's like, "Yeah, she did. She knock down Judaism." I said, "Well, she's just wrong. Because the fact is, there's six things that you have to pay, possibly seven. There's nezek, if there's damage that's done, damage incurred. Tsar, the pain of the woman that you just gave pain to. Ripoy, doctor bills if need be. Sheves, if she lost work. Boshes, if she's embarrassed. Aside from the fact that you have to pay 50 shekel kesef. The reason why the Torah says he should marry her is because she may feel this inferiority complex. Number one, she finds this connection that she has with the first person that she slept with. So the Torah says she's going to feel like she can't marry anybody else. Don't worry, you will always have a husband. That's number one. Number two, she might feel like she's just feeling so bad about herself. Don't worry, there's somebody who's going to marry you, and if she wants to refuse, she's allowed to refuse. But there are seven things that we end up making him do, aside from the knas, the fine of 50 shekel kesef. But you wouldn't know that from reading the pasuk. You read the pasuk in the Torah, and all it says is there's a knas, 50 shekel kesef. That's what you got to pay if you rape a girl. But there's a secret behind the Torah. There's an idea behind the Torah. If you just read it as is, you're right, you're going to see nothing. Because we're not going to write down everything for you. We want you to work at it. We want you to find. There's secrets here. So go through it. And that's the Vayikra. Call out to somebody, and then Vayidaber Hashem Elov. Then speak about it, because you'll realize there's something here that you're totally missing. Totally missing. You just have to concentrate and look at it a little bit, and you'll find it.
Why would it say then that you'll have to pay like 7 to 6 million? Why?
This is the because if you look in the order of where the Torah is bringing it, most of the other payments that are mentioned in that parsha are knasos. They're all fines. They're not monetary payments. They're all fines. We're going into a different section of the Torah. The monetary payments have been mentioned already in Mishpatim. What are they called? Compensatory, right? Compensatory versus punitive damages. Compensatory damages have been mentioned in Parshas Mishpatim. That's if you damage somebody. Punitive damage are mentioned in Parshas Ki Tse, and that's the reason why we're mentioning it over there, because a rape has other things involved. But in the section of punitive damages that you get aside from the regular damage that you pay, that's what we're going to mention. We're going to put it over there. That's the idea behind it. There's a lot more to it, but that's just part of the secret. If you want to know the whole secret, you got to look through all Bava Kamma. I mean, you got to go through all Bava Kamma and try to understand what is going on, the difference between Dini Mamonis and Dini Adam. Go through the first two eight Prakim, and you'll see that it's clear. You just got to go through it. That took 39 years of Dor Dea with Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron and the rest of the Zakenim, 39 years in the Midbar doing nothing else but learning Torah. And then they were able to come out with a Torah that was understood by the people. I mean, come on. We're in Yeshiva for what? A year? 2 years? 3 years? And they were like, yeah, we should know everything by now. How many years are you there for? I mean, come on. 39 years straight. No bathroom breaks. They had mun. No bathroom breaks. They didn't have to go to the washroom. No water breaks. No eating breaks. Nothing. No, the Torah was written already, but going over the Torah and doing the Torah Shebaal Peh took 39 years to go through to be able to get all those reasons and get all those understandings. Come on. We can't think about ourselves. For 1 year, we're going to be able to do this, or 2 years, we're going to be able to understand everything. There's so much we're missing. No cell phones that I know of. Here we go.
The lady that wrote that book certainly didn't go to yeshiva.
No, for sure not. Not that I know of. She might have. Just a different type of yeshiva. So that's why Vayikra is special. That's why there's many other times where it says Vayikra in the Torah. Many other times. Times before this. Yet Moshe Rabbeinu only wrote this Aleph small. Why this Aleph worth over any other Vayikra. Why write this Aleph small? I'll tell you why it's so small. Because here we're talking about Korbanos. Who in the world understands Korbanos? Sacrificing an animal is going to bring you closer to a Kadosh Baruch Hu? Yeah, you have the Ramban, and you have the Rambam, you have the, everything else that's written out there, all the ink that's been spilled on why Korbanos are there. But the real secret behind it, it's a chok. It's a chok. It's beyond our understanding. It's beyond anything. You can use all the Kuzaris you want. Use all the Ad Yosefs and all the Miam Loezes and every answer that you have you want. At the end of the day, you're never going to figure it out fully. You'll be able to get a little bit. You'll be able to get pieces. But there's going to be something that blinds me from going a little bit further, that's not going to allow me to go any bit further. There's something, there's a pshat, there's something around there. That's why here specifically by Korbanos, which is such a huge part of the Torah, there's almost 200 mitzvos, ase and los ase, that deal with Korbanos. Just with Korbanos. That go through all the different things that we don't have. There's no way for us to do nowadays. Almost 200 of them altogether. It's 140 or something, whatever it is. But we have a ton of them. Only about Korbanos. About nothing else but this. What in the world is pshat? Why is HaKadosh Baruch Hu giving us something that would only last until the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed? Why? For 2,000 years we haven't been able to do any of this. Why? That's a great question. So the answer is going to take a long time to be able to figure out. That's going to take a long time to be able to figure out and to try to get this type of idea. You'll listen to last year, because I spoke about this a little bit last year. But again, that's not going to figure out. And then, even then, when you get to Korbanos, try to figure out a mincha. The flower offering? Or the birds? Even that, what in the world is the point of bringing flour to God? Well, he needs bread with his, you know, he needs buns to be able to put the meat inside. I mean, it seems out there. So here we go. So what are you supposed to do? Yes, you are. The quantum were allowed to make sandwiches. There's another lesson behind Vayikra, but most of it was matzah, so it's not exactly the best sandwich. The 30 out of the 40 loaves were matzah over anything else. Pita bread, oh, yeah, if they were Sparty over there. Here's another shot, right, if you had something like that. Oh, here's the idea. There's another lesson behind Vayikra, and this is mamish, this is the stories. And you're going to hear these stories, three stories altogether. Awesome, awesome stories. It's from Aleinu L'Shabeach, Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein, the son-in-law of Rav Eliashiv. It's a great idea. So who was Vayikra? And he called out. Vayikra al Moshe, Vaydaber Hashem Elov. So who was the Vayikra? You assume that it was God. You assume God called out. And that makes sense, right? God called out, Vaydaber Hashem Elov, and God spoke to him, and that, okay, we'll go through it. But you assume that it's God. Says Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein that the pshat is, it's a bas kol. A bas kol goes out, a voice goes out, and speaks to every individual. Something goes out, and it's Vayikra al Moshe. Every individual gets that call in every situation you're in. Wherever you are, before you were sitting here, before you came here, there was a bas call that went out and it said, go learn. That bas call went out. Some people listened to it. Some people didn't listen to it. There are people that clearly used their ears and said, I hear that, I'm going to go. There are people that didn't. There are people that said, you know what, I hear it, but I'm not going right now. That's the bas kol. You can choose to listen to it, or you can choose to listen to the outside noise, that's sometimes the static that interrupts you, that doesn't allow you to get in there. Listen to this. By Dabar Hashem Elov, it speaks to him, to every person. Here's the Maisa. I want you to, there's so many lessons that I got from this over this past week. I've been using this story in like four different ways. But here's the mice. It goes the following. A chassid and a kawa came to Rav Chaim Knievsky. It was not too long ago. Here was the problem. The chassid had just unfortunately had gotten very sick. He went to the doctor. He was told he has a very rare form of cancer. It doesn't look like he's going to make it. It's going to be very, very hard. And he has to undergo chemotherapy right away. And it's going to be, he's going to have to be in the hospital for quite a while. And it's going to be very, very hard for him. So he said, he went to his kawa. And he told his kawa, I don't want to go through with the wedding. They weren't married yet. He told his kawa, he said, I don't want to go through with it. I don't want to put you through the tsar that I'm going through. There's no reason for you to get involved. This is my deal. But you're a great girl. You deserve the best. Go out, find another chassan, and get yourself married. You're still young. You're 19 years old, whatever it was. I could be 17. Anyway, you're young. Go out, get yourself married. Everything should be all good. I'm sorry. I don't want to put you through this. The kawa said, absolutely not. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave you this tsar now, it's for a reason. It must be that I'm supposed to be with you and to be around you while you're having this tsar, while while you're going through chemotherapy and everything, we'll delay the wedding, but I'm 100% getting married to you. I'm not saying no for an, I'm not taking no for an answer. I am getting married to you no matter what. Chassan said, absolutely not. He refused. It got into such a fight. The Chassan saying, I don't want to marry you. She's saying, no, I am going to marry you. They brought it to their parents. The parents couldn't decide. They brought it to Reb Chaim Kanievsky. So they brought to Reb Chaim Kanievsky, they sat in Bnei Brak. He said to Reb Chaim Kanievsky the whole story. And he said to the husband, you're positive you don't want to marry her? And he said, absolutely not. He said, do you want to marry her? He said, of course I want to marry her. Of course I do. But there's nothing here. I can't let her. I can't allow myself to allow a person to be under such sorrow when it's not in their own hands. I can't do it. I just can't do it. But the girl said, I can't let him go through with this on his own. I have to be with him, and I really want to be with him. Listen to what happened. Chaim Kanievsky looks at them, and says, thinks for a minute, nods his head, says to them, okay, get married. You should have a bracha, everything should be all good. Give them that bracha. Okay, they left. Chaim Kanievsky goes back to his learning. A little bit later, somebody goes up to him, one of his close confidants that were with Chaim Kanievsky, they said to him, I said, tell me, why did Rebbe say that? Like, was this just like an emotional thing? Just get them together and, you know, let them get married and everything will be all good? Like, what was the pshat? Why, Rebbe, did you say that? So Reb Chaim Kanievsky, it's unbelievable, said, it's a medrash mefurish. It's a medrash mefurish. If you're asked a question like this, what are you going to do? You know, you're going to go back to your knowledge of TV shows and movies. You're going to be like, okay, what happened when they got married? Okay, things worked out at the end. What happened when they didn't get married? And then it was really bad, and they got married to the wrong people, and it was really bad at the end. It was like a bad, bad ending to the movie, right? But like, Reb Chaim Kanievsky, he's kulo Torah. So the only raya that he could give, one way or the other, it's not seichel. He's not using his own seichel for this, to answer this kasha. He's using the Torah. He says a medrash. Where's the medrash? Bracious Rabba, Perek Lamed Gimel, Piska Aleph. It's in Parshas Noach. In Parshas Noach, the Medrash Rabbah says the following story. Melech Katzi. There was a Melech that lived at the end of the world. That's what it's called. At the end of the world. He was behind the Hari Choshech, the mountains of darkness. So Alexander the Great, when he's traveling throughout the world, he knew there was a certain king that was there behind the Hari Choshech, and he wanted to go see him and see how he judged. But they would not allow the army to go into that land. They wouldn't allow him. It was very hard to get in. There was only one way to get in. They allowed only Alexander the Great to go through. Alexander the Great went through, and he went to see the Melech Katzi, and the Melech Katzi said, what do you want from me, Alexander the Great? You've taken over most of the world. What do you want from me? Alexander the Great said, I want to see how you judge. I want to see how you judge cases in your land. So Alexander the Great said, not a problem. I'll let you come and watch. The king, Melech Katzi said, I'll let you come and watch. Soon afterward, two men came, a buyer and a seller. One had sold a field to his friend, and in the field was a treasure. It was a huge treasure. So the seller said, I sold the field to the guy, and I sold everything in it, including the treasure, and therefore I should not get the treasure, it should belong to him. The buyer said, I just bought the land. I never bought the treasure. So the treasure really belongs to the owner, the previous owner, and the seller should get the treasure. It's like the opposite of normal things. So the king of Katzi looked at them both, and he said, I hear. He looked at one and he said, do you have a son? He said, yes. Looked at the other and said, do you have a daughter? He said, yes. He said, get your son and daughter married to one another and give them the treasure. Then there won't be any problems. The treasure will be given over to your families. They said, oh, what a great etzah. They went and they married off their children. They gave them the treasure and everything was all good. The Melech Katzi turned to Alexander the Great and said to Alexander the Great, what would you have done if this was in your land? What would you have done if this is in Greece? Alexander the Great said, well, if it happened by me, I would have killed both of them and taken the treasure for myself. That's what I would have done. So Melech Katzi said, do you have animals in your land? He said, yes, we have animals. He said, do you have a sun? You have a sun that shines down? He said, yeah, we have a sun. He said, it's too bad, because the only reason why the sun shines on your land is because of the animals. Because you are not people. There's no way, you're too cruel to be people. Alexander the Great couldn't do anything. He didn't have his army. He went out and whatever, he left. But that was the Medrash. Said Reb Chaim Kanievsky, when people are mevater, when people give up of themselves, they don't think about themselves. They're not selfish. They think of the other person involved. They don't lose. Not only do they not lose, they win. Everyone wins, everyone gains, and everything's all good. The Melekatzi realized when they got it, they're both going to keep the treasure. They're not going to lose by trying to give it to the other person. They're not going to lose that treasure. They're going to get it for themselves. Said Reb Chaim Kanievsky, if each one of these people was so unselfish, the husband not wanting to give tzar to his kala, and the kala not wanting for her chassan to be in that position by himself, there's no way they can lose if they're together. You have to marry them off the same way the son and the daughter were married off, and they'll have a treasure. What that treasure will be, I don't know. But that's what the Medrash is trying to teach us. I want you to think. Forget about... There's three people here that have learned from the Baskol. There's a chassan that learned from the Baskol. The chassan said, don't think about yourself, think about your kawa. The kawa, they said, don't think about yourself, think about the chassan. And Reb Chaim Kanievsky, don't make something up. Think through Midrash. And the way Reb Chaim Kanievsky's mind works, do you guys understand what he does every year? Every year, Reb Chaim Kanievsky makes a siyum on, I wrote it down, Tanakh, Mishnayos, Talmud Bavli, Talmud Yerushalmi, Sifra, Sifri, Tosefta, Midrash Rabbah, Midrash Tanchuma, Tur, Shulchan Aruch, and Mishnah Berurah. Rabbi Cohn heard that directly from Reb Chaim Kanievsky's son. Every year, he asked him, how long does it take him for him to do it per day? He said he does it, he finishes it before Shacharis every morning. That's what he does every single year. Every year he makes a siyum. Every year he makes a siyum. There's no one like Reb Chaim Kanievsky in this world. No one like. Absolutely no one like him. When he goes through, his mom is going through it in his head. He's not going through like, what does my mind say? He's saying, what does Chumash say? What does the Mishnah say? What does Bavli say? What does Yerushalmi say? What does Medrash Rabbah say? Oh, I got one. That's how he's thinking. It's not the way we think of all the different, like, what does Ace Ventura say? What does Billy Madison say? What does Wayne's World say? And going all the way back, that's the way our minds work. The way Reb Chaim's mind is so clear, so zach, so barer. You go to him, it's pure Torah. Is it right? Is it right or wrong? That I can't answer you. Who knows what's right and what's wrong? But it's Torah. It's pure, pure Torah. And what that does, sometimes we don't understand that. But that is, it's pure Torah. It's understood from the Torah itself. What, Moshe? We don't know. Doesn't write. I would assume it's not a long answer. I would assume that something happened. That either the person died or whatever it was, I would assume that that's what happened. I would assume that's what happened. Otherwise, it would have said it, because you always have it at the very end, and that child was, you know, Rav Yashiv. So, you have something like that, but that's not the end of the story. I would assume that nothing happened at the very end. I'm going to tell you another story, Mamish Lahapach, the exact opposite way. There was an Av Beis Din that lived in Bnei Brak, who was a very chashev guy. I mean, he was an unbelievably chashev yid. And he had a daughter. This daughter had everything going for her. She's a very good-looking girl. The family was very chashev. There was some money in the family. The abbeis also had a business on the side. There was all this stuff going for her. She had everything good, everything good. She was read to a certain bacher. This bacher also was tremendous talmid chacham, big tzaddik. Everything was going, he was a tremendous guy. Good family, good this, good that, and everything. Everything was going for this guy. One thing wrong. When he was much younger, he broke his leg. And it was never healed properly. They never put the splint on properly. And he had a limp. He wasn't able to walk correctly. So every time he walked, there was a little bit of a problem. But other than that, this guy was unbelievably good. So the Av Beis Din said, who cares? I could care less about this, the broken leg. But I said, this guy's a tremendous bacher, tremendous talmid chacham. I want him as my son-in-law. But his wife, the Rebbetzin, said, absolutely not. He said, our daughter deserves the best. And this is not the best. This is second best to me. I want someone who's perfect in every way, shape, or form. I don't want any questions, no nothing. And the wife said, just be that broken leg. And the Av Beis Din kept saying to her, a broken leg? You're stopping the shidduch because of a broken leg? It's ridiculous. But the wife said, absolutely not. I don't want it for my daughter. My daughter deserves better than this, and I'm not going to allow it to happen. Av Beis Din couldn't go through. The shidduch was broken up, and they both went out with different people. Later on, the Av Beis Din started, he got a little bit of a sickness. He wasn't feeling so well. He's an older person, so the psak was for him that he should have a little bit of tea before he goes to davening in the morning. He should drink a little bit of tea. Now, lahalacha, if you look up in the Shulchan Aruch Simon Pei Test Sif Gimel, there's nothing wrong with drinking a little tea before davening. Okay, can you put in sugar? Can you put in milk? Okay, those are all kashas, but to drink tea before davening, especially if you're feeling weak or sick and you can't daven so well, no problem with it whatsoever. So Av Beis Din told his wife, I'm going to have to drink tea in the morning. Could you have tea ready for me when I'm leaving in the morning? She said, no. I want you to be machmir. I want you to be machmir. You can do it. You're a very chashuv person. You know, an adam chashuv shiny. A person as chashuv as you should not be drinking tea before you're davening. You shouldn't be drinking anything before you're davening. You shouldn't eat. You shouldn't drink. You shouldn't have anything before you're davening. So I'm not going to allow you to have the tea. The Abbas said, I'm telling you. He went and he got a posek, and the posek told her, yeah, he has to drink tea. She said, fine. My husband has to drink tea. So she got up and she started making the tea for her husband. One morning, she got up to make the tea. As she's walking to bring it to her husband, she trips on something, falls down, breaks her leg. She has a limp for the rest of her life. She's told she's going to have a limp for the rest of her life. If I would ask you, why? Why'd she get that limp for the rest of her life? She'd say, maybe, you know, if we were God, we'd say, Mida Keneged Mida, she didn't allow that broken leg bacher to be able to, you know, marry her daughter, so therefore she got a broken leg. You know what she did? She immediately got up and screamed at her husband, if you wouldn't have told me to make tea, this never would have happened. If you wouldn't have told me, the only reason why I broke my leg is because you told me to make tea. I made tea for you and now I broke my leg.
Did they get divorced?
Do you understand how a person can totally miss pshat? Totally miss pshat. I'm not saying that the idea was that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had in mind the Mida Keneged Mida, she refused the shidduch, therefore she broke her leg. We have no idea why HaKadosh Baruch Hu does things. But for someone on the outside to look at this, that would be the likelihood of this case. For someone on the inside who's no gaya bedaver, that's what happened, because sometimes we fool ourselves. We say to ourselves, something must be true when it's really not true. Around the turn of the century, this is an unbelievable story. Around the turn of the century, there was an old man in Yerushalayim. Everybody knew he was old because when they were younger, they remembered him being old. But no one knew how old he was. The crazy thing about this man, his name was Reb Chaim Baruch Dutchlander. It's written in art scrolls. Sometimes, you know, in art scrolls, the storybooks, Tales for the Soul series, this is in Tales for the Soul 6, you're going to find like a lot of stories that are very hard to believe. Like Hasidic stories that you're just like, I don't know about that. It's very hard to believe. I'm not saying they're not true. It's very hard to believe. But once in a while, you will see a gem of a story. Like, this story is unbelievable. Chaim Baruch Dutchlander, he was just known. Everybody knew him. The problem was is that the thing that was strange about him, he had a coal black beard and jet black hair. Not one white hair throughout his beard and hair. And he looked like that. Everybody remembered him. People that remember when they were kids. Now they were older, 40, 50 years old. They remembered, this is how he looked 40, 50 years ago. He didn't change a bit. He looked like he was 30, 35 years old, and that's it. No older than that. No white hairs at all. Nothing at all. So everybody said, it's so amazing. Everybody, it's so amazed. With Isaac the Butcher. Isaac the Butcher, he was a Yerushalmi from way back when. He owned a butcher shop, obviously. He was cutting up meat, and Reb Chaim Baruch came in one day to go buy food. As he walked inside, Reb Isaac looked at him and realized, oh, Reb Chaim Baruch, unbelievable. You have some white hairs in your beard. You got some white hairs in your beard. It's about time. They're called harzesim bletloch. A bletel on an esrog is like a little, like a blemish on the esrog. Harzesim is where they used to bury people. You have harzesim bletel. You know, you have little stuff in your beard, you're a reminder that you're eventually going to die. Chaim Baruch turned white, ran outside of the butcher shop. So all the other patrons in the butcher shop, they looked over at Reb Isaac the Butcher and they said, why did you do that to him? I mean, you know that wasn't right. He was embarrassed by that. So how was I supposed to know he was embarrassed? I mean, everybody has white hair. How was I supposed to know he would be embarrassed by that? I said, you should go apologize. I said, all right, I'll go. But I'm not going to go now. You guys are all in my store. I'll wait until Mincha. Wait until Mincha. Went to Mincha Gedola. Everybody died in Mincha Gedola in that part of Yerushalayim. He went to go meet him at Mincha Gedola. He wasn't there. I said, hey, he must be so embarrassed because he knew he would see me here. He must be so embarrassed. He ran to Reb Chaim Baruch's house right after Minyan was over. He ran up the stairs, third floor, and he knocked on the door. Reb Chaim Baruch opened the door. He said, Reb Isaac, to what do I owe this pleasure? What are you doing here? So happy. Save your panim yafos. Reb Isaac looks at him and says, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to make fun of you in my store. Please forgive me. Reb Chaim Baruch said, make fun of me. I didn't. No, you didn't do anything of the sort. He said, why'd you run out? He said, I got to tell someone the story. Let me tell you. He said, do you know how old I am? Reb Isaac said, everybody's been wondering that. He said, I'm 100 years old. Reb Isaac looks at him. He momish looks like he was 35 with like a couple white hairs. He said, there's no way you're 100 years old. There's absolutely no way. There's no way you could be 100 years old. It's not possible. Reb Chaim Baruch said, I can promise you, I am 100 years old. I come from the town of Posen. The Tana Posen is where Rabbi Akiva Eger lived. And when I was a young boy, I was a Ben Bias by Rabbi Akiva Eger's house. People were scared of Rabbi Akiva Eger. They didn't want to go in. Rabbi Akiva Eger was such a gon, such a gubble. Nobody wanted to go in. But I felt myself, I was comfortable in Rabbi Akiva Eger's house. So I would go inside the house, I would do whatever Rabbi Akiva Eger needed, I would try to get in whatever it was. One day, Rabbi Akiva Eger was pacing back and forth inside his house, pacing back and forth. Something was troubling him. So I was a little kid, I was 10 years old. I went up to him and I said, Rebbe, what does Rebbe need? Is there anything wrong? Rabbi Akiva Eger said, what can I do? Everybody's out of the house. I don't have any money. And I ran out of ink. Rabbi Akiva Eger used to write his notes, the notes that we have on Shas and on the Gemaras and on Shulchan Aruch. He used to write his notes. He said, I have no ink. I can't write. So I can't go out and buy any ink because I don't have any money. And nobody's home. So I have nothing to do. Chaim Baruch at the time, the little young Chaim Baruch, said, I'll take care of it. Runs outside, goes to his house, grabs a couple pennies, runs to the shuk, grabs a thing of ink, rings it back to Rabbi Akiva Eger. 3.5 minutes later, he's running. And Rabbi Akiva Eger says, thank you so much. Thank you so much for the ink. Thank you so much for the ink. The next day, he makes sure Rabbi Chaim Baruch does it again. Does it a third time. For the next couple days, he makes sure he does it until his family moves out of Posen. He did it every time the Rabbi Akiva Eger needed ink. He was the one who went and did it. When he was leaving Posen, he went to get a birchas preda, a bracha, from Rabbi Akiva Eger for leaving. Rabbi Akiva Eger stroked his cheek and said, what bracha can I give you? So he said, anything. He said, how about this? You will live for a very long time. You will live to a very ripe old age. And you will not look old at all. For the reasons that you had in serving me, I want you to look as young as you would at a normal age. And you will look that way for the rest of your life. The way that you'll know that you're going to die is on the day that you get white hairs, on that day you will die. That's how you know you're ready to die. You should do tshuva on that day. Chaim Baruch turns to Rabbi Isaac and said, today I'm supposed to die. Isaac looks at him. He's got a straight back. He's all strong. He almost looks like an ox. He said, you're not going to die today. Rabbi Chaim Baruch said, I can promise you. Rabbi Akiva Eger told me this. I'm going to die today. Go get the Chaver Kedisha. Rabbi Isaac goes and gets the Chaver Kedisha. The Chaver Kedisha doesn't believe it. They say, Rabbi Isaac? Rabbi Chaim Baruch? There's no way he's dying today. We just saw him. He's running around the street. There's no way he's dying today. He said, I promise you, come with me. They brought him back to the house. They go. They see Rabbi Chaim Baruch sitting at the table, learning a sefer on about death, Mavar Yabok. He was learning Mavar Yabok sitting at the table. They come in. This is a dying man. Are you ridiculous? They were about to hit Isaac the butcher. And Rabbi Chaim Baruch says, no, I'm going to die. Let's do the last everything. Everything that we have to do before I die. Said Shema Yisrael. Made the bracha. Said the whole vidoy. Went down in his bed, closed his eyes, and his neshama left his body. Neshama left his body. Unbelievable story. This story is a Yerushalmi story, told over by Rabbi Isaac the butcher himself to a Yerushalmi. I forgot the name of the Yerushalmi that it was told over to. But it's an unbelievable story that was told over, and then was told over to the author of this book. That is a person who heard the calling, who heard the Vayikra. He heard it. Rav Chaim Baruch heard it and ran to go get that ink. And look what he was rewarded with. 100 years of life. Health. Unbelievable amount of health from a bracha from Rabbi Akiva Eger. The pasuk starts off, and this is how we're ending. Adam ki yakriv mikem. When a person is makriv from amongst you, says, who was this? Rav Shor. Mikem is the gematria of Sam. Mikem mem chof mem is a gematria of Sam, of the Satan. Of the Satan himself, of the Yetzer Hara, of the Malach HaMavis. Our job is to be makriv Sam. To get rid of that Yetzer Hara from within us. To destroy the Satan, to destroy his influence on us. We have to try to get Esav out of our system. Sam is the name of that Malach. The last part of his name is El. As in Aleph Lamed, like Michael, Raphael, Gabriel, Uriel. They all have El's at the end. So too with this Malach. It's Sam, and then there's El. You shouldn't say the full name together. But there's Sam, and then there's El. Why Samach and Mem? What were the two letters on the Luchos that were Benes Hayutzluyin? That were standing there in the miracle? The Samach, because the Samach had a thing in the middle that was not connected. There was a big circle around it. It stood right in the middle and was seen from both sides of the Luchos. And the Mem Sofis. It was not connected to Luchos in any way. Just a rock standing in the middle. Benes Hayutzluyin Bomdin. It stood there. Why the Samach and the Mem? Because what happened at Har Sinai? They lost the Yetzer Hara. They were free from the Malach HaMavis. The Sam didn't exist by them. They no longer had the Sam anywhere near them. The Sam was gone. But what happened when they did the Egel Azov? Malachim Avos came back. And from then on, there was nothing they could do. They after the ego, the Sam came back and everything was all bad. Vayikra with an Aleph means the Satan came back. A small letter has no miloy. That means that Aleph is not spelled Aleph Lamed Pei. It's spelled just Aleph. Just an Aleph. So what letters are missing? Lamed and Pei. Lamed is 30, Pei is 80. 30 plus 80 is 110. The gematria of Nes. When the Satan came back in, we lost all Nisim in this world. Our job is to destroy that Sam, to be Makriv, the Sam, from within us, Yakriv Mikem, bring back Nes, and make everything all good. Make everything all good, bring everything back together. Let me tell you a story to end off with Rav Moshe Feinstein. It's a small one, it's nothing long. Rav Moshe's grandsons were standing by the door of Rav Moshe's study. They saw that Rav Moshe Feinstein was learning. So they were standing by the door waiting for Rav Moshe to finish learning so they could go ask him a question. The Rebbetzin Feinstein, saw them standing by the door. She's a smart woman. She said, if you're planning on waiting until Rav Moshe stops learning, you'll be waiting here until Friday right before Shabbos. Go in and just interrupt him because he's not going to stop. He only stops when someone comes and interrupts him. That Rav Moshe Feinstein was beyond something that Satan was able to get a hold of. Moshe Feinstein sat there all day long. You know what Moshe Feinstein writes in his tshuvas? I don't know if my tshuvas are correct. I do know that I have Das Torah. Because my Das is not influenced by any other books or any other writings. It's only the Torah. So if you want to listen to what the Torah has to say, then listen to my writings. You want to listen to what might be more correct or right, then listen to somebody else. So Moshe Feinstein used to say. And to end off, he once was in a meeting. Moshe Feinstein was once in a meeting. And they were waiting for someone to come in. While they were waiting, he had a sefer open. He was learning out of the sefer. His wife came in, or somebody came in, and said, Moshe, while you're waiting, why don't you eat dinner? You haven't eaten dinner yet, why don't you go eat dinner? He said, okay. He left the sefer open, walked up and went to dinner, ate the dinner, and then came back. After, when he came back, all the Rebbeim that were there, they said to Moshe, Moshe was the gadol amongst them, they said to him, Rebbe, why didn't you close the sefer? There's a minhag. You're done learning. You close the sefer. Moshe Feinstein said, that's only if you stopped learning when you got up from the table. I was learning the entire time when I left the table. And I continued learning even when I came back here. So I don't close the sefer until I stop learning. And then when the meeting started, he closed the sefer. That's the idea. Moshe Feinstein is a person who was able to get rid of it. So to summarize, we have a small off because Moshe was a true anav, constantly working on himself. We got the Torah with Sod from the Malachim because we need it for Pshat, especially here, and that's Vayikra. God calls out to us to give us that those Sodos with the Pshat. The lesson of Vayikra is to hear the voice, to hear that call. The story of the Chassan and the Kala and the wife of the Abbezin. Then we got the story of the old Yerushalminik of Rechaim Baruch Dutchlander, and the Mikem is the Satan, get rid of him within you, and you would be like Moshe Feinstein. That's the idea behind it. We'll stop with that, guys. Have a good Shabbos.